Now, what's the basic idea behind Big JIT or lean production? Work in progress inventory is reduced to the barest minimum. Work in progress, for those of you who are not from production, is nothing but when a work is flowing from A to, say, workstation F, A, B, C, D, E, F is flowing. So when it goes from A to B, from machine A to machine B, between A and B, there is a likelihood of partially machined component from A lying idle between A and B. That is called as work in progress. Now that work in progress is a waste. It costs money to the organization. The work in progress cannot be eliminated to zero, but it can be reduced to the bare minimum. And that's what we're talking about here. Work in progress inventory is reduced to the barest minimum. JIT is a pull system. Production at each stage is initiated only when requested. Who requests this? The market. From the market, I get a signal. Says that we need, say, 5,000 cars of this particular color, this particular CC. And then it comes to the production. And production initiates the whole production of those 1,000 cars. It was earlier different. We manufacture and we sell. Now, those people say that we want this and so we manufacture it. Okay? JIT extends beyond the plant boundaries. It also encourages what is called as supplier partnerships and ensure the deliveries are made on as needed basis. Now, supplier partnership is very common today. All of us know about it. It's nothing but if you are my supplier, I train you into my value system and my demands, what I expect from you. I set my expectations with you. I spell it out. We get congruent with each other. I tell you what are my pluses and minuses. You tell me what are your pluses and minuses. We come together and then we choose to work together with a synergy. And so what happens is when I pick up the call on a Monday morning and tell you, look, this is what I want from you. I've got to just tell you a few words and you know exactly the philosophy and the larger picture from where I'm asking. So what happens is we have a tuning, a trust, a type of a deeper understanding. So a supplier partnership is all about a deeper understanding between a supplier and the organization. Today, every automobile unit in India and abroad has got supplier partnerships, lots of them around them. And supplier partnerships get rewarded because the suppliers also enhance their quality of working and they are able to see their work from a larger angle, from a bigger picture. And then most importantly, they get continued business because they are supplying quality. And the quality improvement also keeps on enhancing them. When the organization says that we want to increase the quality, they'll also have to increase the quality. So it's a constant growth in quality as well as in reducing of wastage and so many other factors. Now, isn't this what we are going to be talking about sometime later? Total quality management. It is. Right? So the benefits of JIT extend beyond the savings of the inventory related cost. Quality problem can be identified earlier. Rework and inspection of the finished goods are minimized. Inventory is nothing but the materials that are lying, which are coming from the supplier to the plant, work in progress, all those things that are going, all part of inventory. Now, there was a time when, as I told you earlier, you are a supplier, I give you my drawing, and then you see my drawing, based on that, you manufacture a sample component and give it to me. I check it and then I say I approve it and then you start going for the mass manufacture. The involvement was less. Today what are we doing? We are educating you as to what we think is quality. We not only show you the drawings, we also come and sit with you, we stand in front of you with your worker and we start monitoring your own production process. We even train you into telling you how to operate the machine the way we think it is correct. You may tell us something which we thought is correct but which may be wrong. So it's a cross learning. So having done that, what happens? If there's an error at the initial stage, I'm able to correct it there and then. So that when the actual production starts and when the materials are coming in, the errors are reduced. So the errors are seen at different stages with constant interaction. It wasn't the case earlier. Single point approval after the drawings and the sample is produced and inspected, And then after that, whatever comes in, comes in. Now, because of this, as a production engineer, when I started my career, I can safely tell you, a lot of errors used to come at the production assembly. Because there were suppliers who were unscrupulous. They used to give a beautiful, good product, totally in line with the drawings. Approval was done. And when it came as a bulk supply, it was all pathetic. So, if I do not have a constant dialogue with you as a supplier, the ethical base of both of us are also disturbed. This is again a very important thing to be understood. An offshoot of the discussion. If you and I are in constant touch with each other, what are the chances that there will be cheating, unscrupulous practices? We are into an informal relationship, right? And so that's very important. And any supplier who is not encouraging this thing should not be taken. So, one of the important things is inventory management happens at every stage so that by the time the work is on in the plant and the car is rolling out, we have a practically defect-free car. There need not be any tension that, you know, this would have gone wrong somewhere, because at different stages we have taken care of the quality aspects, right? The JIT approach requires a serious commitment from top management and workers alike. This is a very important thing which is unfortunately not happening in many companies. A company director goes abroad, he goes for some, you know, trade fair or something. He comes across all these buzzwords. He may go for a global training to some country abroad. And then he'll come back with a buzzword that we need to have JIT, we need to have Kaizen, we need to have all these things. And then he will be driving it down the line. He himself may not be following it. He himself would not like to be a part of the process. He would expect quality, global delivery, fat profits, but the behavior required, he would not be in a position to take it up on himself. One has to walk the talk from the top. If I walk the talk from the top, then my workers will see me as a role model. They will emulate what I'm doing. If I'm not just in time in the office itself, where's the question of I'm telling my workers to be delivering things on just in time? Now, these are behavioral part of JIT, lean manufacturing, which have not been enunciated in these books. But they are the cornerstone of how this thing happens. See, as a trainer, as a behavioral trainer, this is one of the companies where I do training. It's actually a very good JIT, lean manufacturing unit. And I'm addressing this there. And so I'm able to share it with you all while I'm into this discussion. So remember, any one of you listening to me would like to make your life JIT based. You want to think global, then you need to go at a behavioral level. I sincerely believe, I'm convinced for that matter, that nothing changes unless I change myself. All the trainings, all the degrees are not enough unless my transformation takes place. Very simple. Right? So, taking further, a comparison is given between conventional purchasing and JIT purchasing. Okay? There was a time the purchase department in a manufacturing unit used to do purchase, and it was going in the way it is shown to your left. And today we are doing it like the way it is shown in the right. So let's take a few. Conventional purchasing, we used to have large infrequent deliveries, bulk. I'm manufacturing say 10,000 cars or 20,000 cars in the next maybe 2 weeks. So I need this much amount of pistons. I need this much amount of engine blocks, whatever. So large quantities, but number of deliveries will be one or two, maybe. Today we are talking about small but frequent deliveries. It keeps trickling in frequently. Then we go to multiple suppliers for each purchase item. For one item, we used to give multiple suppliers. You know why? Because one supplier might take me for a ride. So I need to have options open. In fact, the supplier manufacturing unit relationship was so aloof that there was always a suspicion that this guy is going to give me something wrong. I was a part of materials and purchase in one of the companies where I was working. And I know how much of check and cross-check we need to do to get things happen. And then one supplier, two suppliers, it is a big stress and strain to operate with two, three different people. Okay, but that was required at that point of time. Today we have few suppliers and single sourcing. One or two people whom I train, whose trust I gain, who start also trusting me, a few, and then we make it single sourcing. Right? short-term purchasing agreements those days. That means, give me this particular component for the next 6 months with this purchase order. After that, I'll see. And invariably, what used to happen was, we used to ask for lesser price from him. And that chap used to literally give it. Or vice versa. He used to come and demand for a higher price, and then we say nothing doing. So there used to be a lot of nonsense. Sorry to use a word. And that wasn't a very healthy way to operate, but that was the best to be done under those circumstances. Let me remind myself about this. Now, short-term purchasing agreements, today we are talking about long-term supplier partnership. If I am roping you in as my supplier in terms of a partnership, and I am not only training you into the various quality norms which I want, and I'm having a frequent interaction with you, I am sort of encouraging you to put investments into plant and machinery in line with what I want, then what I do is I reward you with a long-term supplier partnership. I'll tell you, don't worry, whatever capital expenditure you're having, CapEx, I will reward you with a, do one thing, you can supply to me for the next 5 years or 10 years at a certain rate. Now that becomes really enjoyable for you as well as for me. So I know for sure that here is a person whom I trust, and I know for sure that he trusts me and I trust him, and this becomes a long-standing relationship. And these people are also given the most preferred supplier for this particular component. All those different types of certificates, awards are given because there's a fine-tuning. That person becomes a global partner in whatever I am to the globe outside. Right? Minimal exchange of information between buyer and supplier. It was the case those days. I gave the drawing to my supplier. He may ask me some questions. He may be another engineer like me. So I tell him, look, this is what is a drawing and you better take it up and do it. And nothing more than that, no repeated phone calls, only at the time of delivery, you know, we may have a few interactions, but nothing much. Today it is very frequent. Lots of detailing is there on quality, on deliveries, on understanding, on paraphrasing what he has understood. His view, my view, everybody's view, all those interactions are very involved, right? Prices established by suppliers, very common. What used to happen was at the end of the day, we used to have what is called as bargaining, not negotiating. In bargaining, we are price conscious. In negotiating, we are relationship conscious, right? So this used to happen those days. Today, prices are negotiated. What do you mean by negotiation? It means that the person wants to establish a long-term relationship with me. So when he has a genuine issue of a price rise or in price escalation, he comes back to me. And I, in my own wisdom and understanding of reality, needs to ensure that price hike I should give him. Now that aspect is a relationship building aspect, very important. One cannot squeeze someone just because he's a supplier, and the supplier himself also cannot squeeze a company because he's a monopoly. Those days are gone. Today everybody has to look at the larger picture, not only for one's own personal benefit as a supplier or a manufacturing unit, but also for the whole community around. That's how we are operating today, right? And lastly, geographical proximity of suppliers is not important. And what do you mean by this? I could be having suppliers like the company where I was working as a production engineer, first job. We used to have suppliers away, much away from Mumbai, where I stay. Now, this suppliers used to come from as far as 200, 300 kilometers away. And we used to have a lot of issues about transportation, reaching on time, getting stuck up in the octroi checkpoints and all that stuff. So now what are we doing? Now we are having geographical proximity of suppliers. Take any manufacturing unit in India, any automobile manufacturing unit. You'll find that around the manufacturing units, a number of ancillary units have sprung up. The reason is it becomes easy for them to follow the JIT just in time. One of the properties required for a JIT, geographical proximity, right? So that explains this particular comparison. So now the various elements of lean production are small lot production, setup time reduction, maintaining and improving equipments, pull production systems, focused factories, group technology, work cells or cellular manufacturing. They are hardcore world-class manufacturing terms which I am talking about right now. Let me explain as brief as possible. Small lot production. Production is not done in big lots, it's done in small lots. Why small lots? because the lots are based on the demand from the market. It's a market pull, not a production push, right? Setup time reduction. The setup time of the machinery is reduced as much as possible. Second hallmark. Third one is maintaining and improving equipments. The person who operates the machine maintains it. In the old system of manufacturing, we used to have a production department in which the production engineers and the workers used to only produce. If the machine goes for a breakdown, we used to have a maintenance department person coming and repairing the machine. Today, we have a maintenance department, but they come only when there's a major breakdown, which rarely happens. Why? Because the machine operator who's operating the machine himself is maintaining it on a regular basis, hourly basis, maybe shift basis also, but he knows exactly what his machine is. He knows his baby, as you say, right? So that's again an important thing, because at that stage, if I keep on improving the machine equipment every day, I'll sooner or later come to know if something is going wrong. Compare this with the earlier way of operating. A machine used to be there, set and fixed, and the production used to keep on rolling out. And there was what is called as a preventive maintenance and a breakdown maintenance. The preventive maintenance used to happen once a week or something. And sometimes, even after the maintenance has happened, the next day the machine breaks down. But when I'm listening to the machine, I'm using the word listening. When I'm listening to the machine every day, I come to know whether it's making a rumbling sound or whether it's crying or whether it's crying for attention. I come to know that. That sensitivity develops. So the operator himself acts as a production person. At the same time, he maintains the machine properly. Okay? It's a pull production system, as I told you. Focus factories. The factories are focused what they need to do. Core competence. We are good at this, we'll do only that. So the factory is going to be saying that this is what we make, not this and that and maybe this, maybe that. No, it's everything on core. So when it is a core, the processes become much more stronger, right? Group technology. So a group of people coming together and they work together, and then they are in a position to do what are called as work rotation. If A is absent, B takes over A's work also. So everybody knows about everybody else's function, and this technology, this is supported by the technology of the whole production system, right? And then we talk about work cells or cellular manufacturing. So in which a certain number of components have to be manufactured. So a group of four or five people, just to take an example, will be manufacturing that many number of components, and everything that they want is self-sufficiently provided by them to them. So these are some terminologies that need more explaining. I'm just running through it. Now, why are we covering this in this modern management trends? Because these systems which have come into practice are telling us the importance of thinking differently from the earlier paradigm of management thinking, right? And now we go to the next slide, which talks about workers in lean production systems are expected to be more competent than workers in the traditional systems such as batch and mass production systems. In the earlier days, we used to have the batch production system and the mass production system, which I'm not getting into the details of it right now because it's a separate subject altogether, production management. It only means that once I start setting the machine and the production starts, the worker did not have much of skills to use. All he need to do was what the machine tells him to do. Today it is not the case. Today people have to be more competent, more skillful. Not only one skill, they need to have multiple skills, right? They must be able to work in teams and play active roles in operating and improving the system. Active, underline the word active. They have to be not just people are coming to the company, working, taking their wages and going away. They need to have an active involvement, have an interaction fearlessly about what is happening and what is not happening with a sense of belongingness. It's very important, right? And they have greater responsibilities than those traditional systems. It's a high accountability and responsibility today at the workplace, and which is also rewarded by good compensation, for which the quality of life of the workers have also improved in quite a lot, in fact. Okay. Now we talk about TQM, which I spoke about some time back. TQM, as all of us know, is total quality management. Total quality management. Simple. Everything that I do, I am doing quality conscious. That is what is TQM in short. Let's understand from the slide. TQM is the integration of all functions and processes within an organization in order to achieve continuous improvement of the quality of goods and services. Okay? The goal is customer satisfaction. At the end of the day, the customer, whatever he wants, I have to give him customer satisfaction, customer delight, whatever we want to call it. At the end of the day, he must get what he wants. The product is very good. The service is also good at the time of selling, but the after-sale service is pathetic in a company. That is not TQM. The company is focusing a lot on quality only in manufacturing units. They are doing a lot of sales training for people who are doing marketing and servicing, service training also. But when it comes to after-sale service, they are indifferent. The company same somewhere perceives that this is an insignificant part of the whole thing because my product is good. Sorry, that doesn't work that way. Every department, every small function, every operation, every process, however innocuous they may be, however small they may be, however insignificant they may be, to the eyes, to the mind of the top management, everything needs to be taken care of. A simple thing, a very simple thing, not connected with production, but it is there in a production unit. The washroom. The washroom itself has got a certain schedule of cleaning up and all those things. Are the boys doing it religiously? Do we have enough of deodorants there? Is it a very clean and sanitized place? Are these things going on? Because everything, the reputation of the company from top to bottom is seen from the way it is conducted from the time I enter the security. I go through the plant, I meet people, I go to the washroom, I even go to the canteen. Everywhere when I'm driving quality, that's TQM. That's TQM. It can't be in bits and pieces. Some departments are having quality, other departments just make do. Many service sector people are doing this today, unfortunately. Lot of talk about branding, lot of talk about big things. But when it comes to actual service, it's very shoddy. It's very shoddy. You know, like for example, you are hiring people on contract basis. Just to give an example. In a contract basis, can I think of a TQM? My answer is no as a consultant. I'm not making any comments about anything. The point I'm just trying to drive home from the management point of view, that when I'm taking somebody on a contractual basis to work for my company and for my quality, is he emotionally engaged with me? Not much. Not much. And since he's not engaged with me emotionally, he would be at times, you know, undercutting on the quality which I stand for with the customer. And so the customer will have a complaint against me. This is happening in many service sector organizations today. And these service sector organizations I'm talking about are having the so-called TQM in place as a part of the quality statement. Very hilarious. So it's about everywhere, everything. The support systems, the utilities, everything needs to be quality managed. Okay? It's quite a bit which we can discuss. It's got two components, TQM policy. Defect-free product or service supplied on time to customers. On time is important. Advancing the state of art, which is a development process to meet the rising expectations of the customer requirements. Today you're asking for this quality, this delivery at this time. Yes, I keep giving to you. After about a month or two, your expectations raise. You say, this is not enough. Like we say, ye dil mange more. So when you say that I want something more, am I able to quickly give it to you? That is a hallmark of a TQM. Or do I say, no, I don't think it's possible. I try to give my justifications. Then I try to tell you that it's all in your mind. And then I start quoting some pseudo-historical facts that this has never happened anywhere in the world. What you're asking for, all this is defensive mechanism. Can you say that, okay, this is what you want. Let me see. Let me check out. You go back to your company. Talk to your people. See whether the process is possible. Number of people are asking for this, for newer type of service. The delivery of a certain, let us say, a certain thing like a pizza is coming to your place within the 20 minutes time. Now customer can say, why don't you deliver it in 10 minutes? If the company, the pizza company is really TQM oriented, if it is one, I'm talking about a hypothetical case, then they will really go back and work on making it 10 minutes. If it is not possible, then what is it that is possible? They will try to make it, make up something that's happening. They will try to come nearer and nearer to the customer requirement of 10 minutes. It may be 20, customer wants 10, 10 may not be possible at this point of time, but am I reducing it from 20 to maybe 18, maybe 15? Because in which case I'm showing signs that you matter to me. I'm giving you an open signal saying that yes, you matter to me. See, from 20, I've reduced it to 15. Now, customer can be unreasonable, yes. But when he's unreasonable, one needs to educate the customer as well. Now, that's again rarely done. There are a number of stories I can talk about right now. My own experiences in airlines industry when I travel. But, you know, that'll be too long. The point is that everywhere when something can be done by somebody, one need not back out. One can look into it. That's the point. That's TQM, right? So, it stresses on three principles, TQM. So, customer satisfaction, employee involvement, very important, employee involvement. And then continuous improvement in quality and processes. There was a time when we say customer is a king. Customer is still the king. But customer first used to be the paradigm. Today we say employees first, then comes the customer. If my company has to deliver quality to customers, then within the company, there has to be a lot of united way of working, harmony, the teamwork and the bonhomie, as you call it. All those things are important. Within the company, there should be a vibrant energy, a positive energy. If I'm stretching my boys into working to deliver quality at a breakdown stage, then if I'm delivering quality to the people outside, it'll affect me. So employees are now given good amount of push, training, orientation, so that when internal customers are oriented properly, then the external customers will automatically get oriented. There should be no issues on it. Right? Eight essentials of TQM focus: customer satisfaction, leadership, quality policy, organization structure, employee involvement, quality cost, supplier selection and development, and recognition reward. Now, all these things are basically depicting a very positive management. A management that is really wanting to go for a TQM drive. A management which says that, yes, I want to go for TQM because TQM matters to me. A management which is having the philosophy which says that, yes, it's important. And last but not the least, the leadership part of it. The leaders at the top of the affairs are also willing to drive it down on themselves to begin with. Do I have a TQM in my personal life? That's a question I need to ask if I'm a TQM leader. Am I conducting my life in a TQM fashion? Where are the chinks in the armor? Am I mending them properly? Now, these issues, these things are something that need to be addressed. Okay? Now, further, it's necessary to achieve successful internal working relation. I've already explained this. In order to satisfy external customers, employees come first. A process is a combination of methods, materials, manpower, and machines. And all processes contain inherent variability. Variability means what? Every process has got a tendency to go little haywire. Why? Because every process is run by people. Even if it's a machine, the machine goes through certain wear and tear. Some things can go wrong. So a certain amount of variability takes place here and there. What we call it in quality management as tolerance. So this variability is to be first understood and then addressed in a manner in which the quality that is required is understood by us. If you start being oblivious about variability, and even if the variability comes, you're trying to be too very strict, saying that variability should not happen. Now, many quality people say that variability should not happen. That's very incorrect. Variability will always be there so long as there are human systems. Now, understanding variability and going beyond is a sign of a maturity in quality management. Okay, so our approach must be to progressively reduce variations, thus improving process capability and becoming more consistent. A waiter in a restaurant, for example, is not in the same mood every day. Let's say that the restaurant has got a quality training given to all the waiters. A good restaurant. Now he comes with a certain mood swings here and there. Certain days it happens. Now, there is a variability in that particular type of a behavior which is supposed to deliver to the customer for the customer delight. On a particular day, there's a variability in the behavior. A little here and there. The customer notices it and he complains. Now, there are two ways of handling him. One is sack him. Because I want quality, zero defect, as some people call it. Zero defect is a good concept, but following zero defect is a tall order. Okay? The second way of handling this particular person is understand what went wrong and see that that doesn't repeat. I can reduce the variability, I cannot eliminate it. Anything in life is variable in its nature, in its behavior. I can reduce it. When I reduce the variability, what happens is I am coming nearer and nearer to the zero defect. Zero defect is an ideal. Achieving zero defect all the time is impossible. Impossible. Okay? And so, there is this thing called process capability. Process capability means how well the process is capable of maintaining itself with the barest minimum variability. With the barest minimum errors. That's what is process variability, process capability. Okay? Now, in total quality management, we use what are called as metrics. Metrics is very common now, measurables. We say in management itself that what is not measurable is not achievable. If I have achieved something and there is no measure, then I don't even get the sense of achievement. See, why you can just give this a thought. If I tell one of you who is very obese, reduce your weight, or you come and tell me that I want to reduce my weight. I said, yeah, it's a good thought. But when you say reducing weight, you haven't quantified. So suppose you come and tell me that I want to reduce my weight and I tell you, okay, do one thing, reduce 10 kgs in the next 6 months or 1 year. The moment I say 10 kgs in 1 year, what happens in your mind? There is a certain amount of alertness. Anything measurable always gives the human mind an alertness. It sensitizes the human mind into something where that needs to be achieved. There's a distance element that comes into the brain's thinking. Very important aspect, ponder over it, friends. So when you talk about metrics, measurables, quality by itself cannot be measured. But when I put a measure, what happens is I am able to understand what's quality. Now, there's an expansion to the word metrics in this slide. Measure everything that results in customer satisfaction. Measure everything that results in customer satisfaction. Okay? Now we talk about outsourcing. Outsourcing world-class supply management. Outsourcing is nothing but, as you know, I find that my core competency is in manufacturing engines. And in the engines, there are certain components which I need to put as an assembly. Those components are not my core competency. If I make those components in my company, it's a waste of time, energy, and drain to my competency. I may have to devote time on that, and it's a wasteful resource for me. So what I do is I go to the best supplier whose core competency is that component, and then I give it to him. So the basic philosophy behind outsourcing is I focus on my core competence and I look for people whose core competence is ABCD, which is required for my own work. That's outsourcing, right? So cross-functional teams. Cross-functional teams are used to meet specific stated objectives such as new product development or negotiations of all terms and conditions of a purchase agreement. When I say cross-functional teams means a team comprising of working towards a project together. I'm developing a new product. The product development requires components to be sourced from outside. So there's one person who sources the component. His function is sourcing. Second person who assembles and tests it. Third person who does a prototype running, etc. Fourth person may do the costing, etc. So all these people put together have to work together towards making this project happen. Cross-functional. Now, when cross-functional teams come together, what happens? There's an exchange of ideas, clash of ideas also, but there's a lot of cross-learning. There's a unification. Now, this unification brings about each one trying to understand the problem and the aspects from the other person's point of view. It wasn't the case ages ago. I remember having attended a quality meeting in the production place where I was working. I, as a production engineer, is sitting there. There's a quality control counterpart of mine, and there's a maintenance person also sitting. And then we also have the materials people, and all the four of us are talking. When we talk, you know, what are we doing? We are all trying to protect our point of view, arguing. At the end of the meeting, nothing happens, or something happens which is not really fruitful, the way it should be. This was the old paradigm. In the new paradigm, if all the four of us are sitting together, we are trained into attentive listening, empathetic listening, trained into cross-functional training also, understanding how maintenance works by being in the department, job rotation. Then once I know the entire picture, I know that my contribution of the work is contributing to the whole team in this way. And everybody is respectful towards each other. There's no fear. There's a lot of informal, involved working. That's the beauty about it, right? So cross-functional teams are very common today, and every one of us needs to work in a cross-functional thinking process, right? Now we talk about supply chain and supply networks. Another very common feature which we talk about in units today, supply chain. The raw material is coming from the mines, the iron ore. Then it goes for its own refinement. It comes through stages to the blast furnace where the pig iron is being made. And then from there are a number of components getting rolled out. Now at each stage, there's a supply of some semi-finished goods or raw materials into the next stage. Now as it's flowing from A to B, B to C, C to D, there is a movement of materials and certain other processes. How well does this function? Is it important for me to understand what is happening at A when I'm at station C or D? Important. Because it's like a dominoes effect, as you know. You know, number of cards you keep leaning on one another. If I just trip the first card, everything falls one after the other, right? So a small problem at A will create a major problem at F when the production is coming out. So today, we lay a lot of emphasis on supply chain. So what A does outside, some factory somewhere out of the town where you are, does matter to you. Thanks to technology, today we are mapping people who are moving around in the country, in the world. GSM mapping we have. So that when people are coming from different places, we know this is a supply, how the tracking is taking place, tracking as you call it, right? So a supply chain tells me how efficiently, how well the entire process is going, flowing very well. And to that extent, a supply chain needs to go through that orientation as well. They need to go through the training. A person who is in the godown cannot afford to say that the production sent the cars to me on so-and-so date, so I'm sending it late. No, there's a constant dialogue on both sides, on the back end and also in the front end. Back end being the place from where I'm getting the materials to me, and the front end being from where it is going. There's a very common communication that is going on at all stages of the supply chain today. This is a management process which was not present those days, right? The supply chain is the upstream portion of the firm's value chain. It is responsible for ensuring that the right materials, services and technology are purchased from the right source at the right time and the right quality. Now, we talked about local purchases for an automobile unit, right? We said it's around the geographical area. If I talk about supply chain, it need not be only the geographical area. It can be somebody who's giving me the right purchase, price at the right time, etc. We have what is called as global sourcing. In a global sourcing, which happens in certain automobile units, a certain component may not be bought from India itself. They may be bought from some other country. Because the supply chain science tells me that buying it from there, in terms of the dollar exchange value, in terms of the economy of that country, in terms of the supplier's competence, etc., it's worth it. So these factors are the ones that govern the way the supply chain networks operate. The supply chain is a series of organizations extending all the way back to the firms which extract materials from Mother Earth. I took the example of iron ore from Mother Earth. The iron ore is extracted and finally it becomes some steel component which we are all using. So all throughout the journey from the refuse to the use, as they call it. Refuse is something which people don't even look at, right? From Mother Earth, it comes to the useful part. All along, there's a value addition that is taking place. Finally, we get the product which is a product of convenience and used for all of us. So this entire thing has to be studied and they have to align themselves properly, right? In the modern approach, the buyer-seller relationships enlightened self-interest and the realization that competition is between value chains all combined to motivate buyers and sellers in a collaborative mode. There's nothing like a competition of, you know, company A with company B. The company A is said to be competitive over company B if it's got its TQM in position, if it's got its supply chain in position, if it has its just-in-time in position. It's all about internal working and ensuring that the processes are constantly refined. I don't have to look at my competitor outside. I have to look at what I am doing. My competitiveness is centered to me. Like we use this term, you know, whom am I supposed to compete with? I am supposed to compete with myself. That explains it all. So if I set a standard and a benchmark for my own company, then I need to excel it better than what I did last year and keep on doing it. So when I concentrate on that a lot, what happens is automatically the opportunities and threats are taken care of. Okay? So compatibility of interests is very common. The interests of the supplier, the interests of the companies, both have to be compatible with each other. I need to sell cars globally. You need to be seen as a global vendor. So both of us are compatible in the needs. Okay? Mutual needs are taken care of. Willingness to be open for sharing information and benefits resulting from the relationship. And last but not the least, trust. Very, very important. Strategic sourcing. Now, when I say strategic, anything which is long term, anything in which I don't know the unknowns are more than the knowns, that's strategic for me. I'm entering into a battlefield. I don't know from where the enemy is coming. That's an unknown. That's more unknowns than knowns. So strategic sourcing comes when I'm entering into the big bad world to source something, right? And there are certain types of mindsets, certain types of way of thinking is important. It's defined as a systematic process that directs supply managers to plan, manage and develop the supply base in line with the firm's strategic objectives. Strategic objectives meaning the company decides that in the long run, I want to penetrate this particular market. I don't know the market at all today. I don't know what the consumers are, but something tells me I must go there. My business intelligence tells me I must go there. I got some peripheral idea about it. So that may be the strategic objective of the company. So when that happens, then I need to go and explore more, right? It's the application of the current best practices to achieve full potential of integrating suppliers into long-term business process. If I keep on giving you the best by refining my processes, by investing in the processes, will my cost come down? Answer is yes. When the cost comes down and the quality is also very good, then what happens is my pricing becomes pretty competitive. I can stay well below the pricing of other people and still stay competitive. And when this happens, my strategic sourcing becomes very easier for me, right? Today we talk about e-procurement. Procurement is done on the net using the various, you know, the ERP processes, enterprise resource planning, network linked, okay? The internal end user of an item or a service need not depend on the purchasing personnel and is now empowered to place orders through the internet directly on the suppliers who are selected by the sourcing teams. So you as a production engineer, you know what you want. You know, you may not have to go to the materials department to give them the drawing and explain to them. So there may be a disconnect between what you think and what they think, perhaps not always. So what you can do is you can directly go on the e-net, the internet, and look for suppliers, maybe get in touch with them telephonically or in a video conferencing, and then get your products sourced. Okay. Outsourcing lets organizations pay only for the services they need while they need them. It also reduces the need to hire and train specialized staff, brings in fresh engineering expertise, and reduces capital and operating expenses. The shortest way of understanding outsourcing is I outsource to the people who are experts in that field. Very simple. The rest of it is to be aligning itself to this particular thought process. If the thought says that I need to outsource it, then ask myself a question, who is the best in this particular field, in this competence? Outsource it to those people. The rest of it falls has to fall in place, right? That's the end of it, my dear friends. I would like to conclude by talking about the importance of learning to shift your paradigm of management thinking from the old economy mindset, as I call it, to the emerging global mindset. So this particular chapter is focusing on the importance of us to start thinking expansively, to work in teams, to think about quality, to reduce wastage, reduce costs, and become more profitable. Thank you very much.